Welcome to the Literacy Lunch Break. I'm your host, Marjorie Botari. In today's episode, we have Naomi O'Brien, an education influencer and literacy advocate. We delve into how educators can use their online presence and influence to champion the cause of structured literacy. From social media to community engagement, learn how Naomi is mobilizing a network of educators to raise awareness and drive change in literacy instruction. We are so excited to have Naomi O'Brien here today. Naomi, thank you for joining us. Do you want to just give a little background about yourself, who you are, and your experience in education?
Yes. Okay. So I am an educator. I just finished my 11th year in the classroom. The majority of my experience is in K through 2, but I've also worked with up to fifth grade. I have a gifted endorsement as well, and an endorsement for working with language learners. A lot of, or not even a lot, all of my time has been spent in Title I schools, and I'm just really passionate about working with students and teaching them how to read. It's something that I really pride myself on. It's why my Instagram tag is Read Like a Rockstar, because I just discovered early on that I have this really great gift for teaching kids how to read, making it fun, and also helping others to do the same as well, just by sharing tips and tricks and things like that.
I love it. So you've established yourself as a very prominent education influencer. I've been searching your website, checking out Reading Like a Rockstar, teaching.com. Remember to add that teaching on, right? So many resources available there. So before we dig in to all of those pieces, I would love to just hear a little bit about your background. What got you started on this journey? And what made you really decide to use your presence to champion structured literacy?
Yeah, I think I was one of the teachers that was lucky enough, I guess, to have gotten the right instruction in college, as well as just starting out my first year in education back in 2010 with a curriculum that was teaching phonics explicitly and that was following a lot of the stuff that the science of reading says we should be doing. And as I moved to another state, I started out in Florida. And when I moved to Denver, a lot of people weren't doing that. It was more balanced literacy and all this stuff I had never heard of that didn't seem effective to me because I had just come off of 3 years of doing it a certain way where we were seeing amazing results. And then I'm going to the schools with really, you know, poor reading data. And I'm like, well, of course you're doing it the wrong way. And just as I went through more and more schools, I was like, there's a lot of teachers that are doing following balanced literacy really with the best of intentions. And this is what they learned to do in college, or this is what the curriculum says to do. And it's just not yielding the results because it's not what readers need. And as I started to grow on social media, I was like, well, let me just share about this because it's working in my classroom and it's what students need. And now back then, I wasn't super research-based. I didn't know why my approach worked so well, but I was like, I think y'all are missing phonological awareness. Like, here's this little thing that I do in my classroom that no one seems to be talking about. And just as more and more teachers and even parents that will reach out to me because their children are having trouble at school, I saw that it was just a need where people want to do better or they feel frustrated, but they don't know what to change. So I was like, let me just share what I'm doing because it's always worked in my classroom. I've always grown a group of amazing readers. So that was really my motivation of just like, you know, illiteracy is a social justice issue. I'm super passionate about social justice. So it's like, they have to know how to read to grow up and be able to do anything in this world. So it's just something that I feel like is my duty to share. Like if I have a better way, or if I know a more effective way, or if I read certain research that I think people don't know about, like I just feel compelled to share it.
I love it. And there's so much that you said in that, you know, explanation. Just even backing up, I think your story is a little bit different than so many teachers, right? Because I think we often hear, you know, I wasn't prepared in undergrad. I didn't get this information. And so that I always thought, you know, this is the way you were supposed to teach. And now all of a sudden you're learning the other way where you kind of had it right from the start. Yes. So you got to see that success. You knew, and as you said, maybe not why it worked, but you knew it worked. And then kind of shifting, I think that is a little bit of a shock, right? Then when you shift to a district that maybe is doing something a little bit different.
Right. And I was going to these trainings and I was like, there's no way this works. And I'm like, why? And I was like, is it me? Like, am I the wrong one? But I was like, I'm looking at the data and I'm seeing frustrated teachers that are like, oh, it's the kids, it's the kids. And it's like, I think it's the reading approach. So I would just kind of close my door and do what I knew to work. And they'd be like, how are you doing that? And I'm like, oh, let me share this resource with you because this is what we're doing differently.
Right. So, yeah. And I think that's an important piece too, right? Looking at the data and And what you just said is, oh, it's the kids. So as we start to talk about social justice, right, and equity, a little background is I started my teaching career as a sixth grade reading and language arts teacher on the south side of Chicago, and that was often the piece of, oh, they're not being read to at home, or they don't have books at home. And it's like, no, that's not, you know, yeah, reading is great, right? But you can read to a child when they're young. That's not teaching them how to crack the code. That doesn't stop us from educators being able to teach them how to read. And how do we make that shift? So as we kind of think about that social justice piece and just literacy for all, right? Everyone. Some of those small shifts or changes that we can make, or maybe not even small, this is kind of a large one, right? Like, it's not the kids, it's let's take a step back and take a look at how we're teaching reading, right?
Right. Not the kids. Sometimes it's the instruction. And I feel like sometimes that can be a hard pill to swallow. But I feel like as educators, we constantly have to be reflective and examine our practices. And even the research out now, it could change in the next 5 years, and we still have to be getting better and changing and adding on and making tweaks to be delivering the most effective instruction.
So as you think about that, you just said, you know, sometimes that could be a hard pill to swallow. As you think about your advocacy, what are some of the challenges that you have faced as you're trying to make sure that this information is reaching everyone to create a system where we're providing all students with the skills that they need to be proficient readers? What are some of those challenges you chased, and how have you addressed them?
A lot of the pushback I get is from educators thinking that there's two options. There's structured literacy or there's balanced. Both are valid, and you just kind of choose what works best for you, where it's like there's a right way, and there's a way that's okay, and maybe some of the kids will learn to read despite what you're doing, but there's a way where 95% of our readers could be learning, and that's what we need to be going towards. So it's like, there's also I think the veteran teachers. I recently just worked at a school, and for my first time, like, everyone that had been there was like 20 years plus. Like, I'm usually amongst younger educators. And they were like, we've been in this game for so long. We've seen these things come and go. Okay, science of reading, that's the new buzzword. Mm-hmm. So I get it. But also it's like, no, like, this is one that you really, like, you. It's hard to convince people that have seen things come and go, because I've seen the same thing. You know, like, I just finished my 11th year in the classroom. But this is not just a pendulum swing, right? It's research. It's been around. It's not something new they're throwing out there. It's what should have been there in the first place. So I think getting people to buy into the idea that this is actually a really effective thing that you must do. And what happened at my school is, even though I was kind of like trying to point out things like there, we had a training where they were showing people how to teach kids how to memorize sight words. And they're like, hold up the card and then tell them to close their eyes and picture the word. And I was like, oh. But it wasn't until February, because I was given, I think because of my interview, I was like, no, like, science of reading and reading is my jam. Like, they gave me this really lowly stacked class. I just taught second grade. None of them knew their alphabet. Like, we had to start all the way back at the beginning. Yeah. And by February, I had some readers. I had students like just scoring off the charts on their Dibble scores. And it was that time that people were like, wait a minute, what are you doing? What's different in your classroom? Like, and then people had to come to my classroom, and they were giving them subs so they could watch me run my reading block. But it's February, so their students were getting improper instruction because they didn't want to listen at the beginning of the year. So it can be hard to change minds of people that are just stuck in their ways, that think that it's a pendulum swing. Mm-hmm. And also people that are, like you said, so quick to just blame the kids or blame the home life. And I've worked in Title I schools my whole career as well. I have language learners, there's poverty, there's trauma, there's you name it, I've taught it. And while there are factors that might make some things take a little bit longer, it's a few months longer. It's not, they're not, they shouldn't be years behind unless there's something seriously, you know, going on. But there's that mindset too of like, this data is acceptable because look at our students, like, it's acceptable for these kids. Mm-hmm. And I need that mindset to shift as well, because I know, I'm like, I look at the students in a lot of my class last year, they were a lot of newcomers to the country from Guatemala, El Salvador. And I'm like, I don't care that you're new to the country. Right. Like, you're in second grade. You've been here since kindergarten. We should not be this low. And then for other teachers that are like, oh, well, they're newcomers, they don't really speak the language, it doesn't matter. Like, if you're teaching them the code and you're embedding phonological awareness with it, they will be able to read. Maybe they don't know what they're reading because they haven't gotten all the language yet, but they should be able to sound out words and read if you're doing it the right way.
Right. And I think what you're saying is so important. And I think really what that comes from is, like, because when we think about education, right, none of us went into it not wanting to teach kids how to read or do what's best. But there comes this level of discomfort, right? Like, I don't really know what to do for a student that doesn't know how to speak the language, or I don't know what to do for this newcomer. And so, you know, it's really hard for them. And, you know, it's going to take a while. And then they can go on to somebody else's class. And it's not a thing about, like, I don't want to, but it's also like, how are we preparing teachers, or how are we sharing this information? As you just said, it's a code, right? Especially if they're coming from an alphabetic language, like this transfer between blending. What do? We blend parts or sounds together. That's how we read words. When we're segmenting, we're spelling words. That skill transfers across languages. Yes. And so it's really, you know, sharing that message. And I think that's why your work is so important, because when we're kind of in our own district bubble or our own school bubble, if there's very, you know, very similar thinking or leadership, you might not be aware of, like, oh, actually there is a different way that I can teach this, or actually this does transfer.
Right.
And this isn't standard, or like, this isn't acceptable. So as you spoke about that 95% piece, right? And 95% of our students can become readers. And I think when we, it's shocking even to teachers. Often when I provide professional development, I kind of share what percentage of students do you think can become readers? Mm-hmm. Typical guesses, 100%, 95%, right? What percentage of students do you think become proficient readers? And we always drop that expectation is 60%, 70%. And that's where it's like, let's pause for a moment. Why do we accept that in our nation? Yeah. Why do we say that's okay? Right? If we know that this is possible, how are we saying, oh yeah, we think 95 to 100% of students can become readers, but we think it's actually probably about 60%, which sadly it's lower. Right. But like, we kind of accept that as okay. And so I think the work that you're doing is so impactful, so powerful, because teachers do need to find another way. So I think any teacher that's listening to this, just, you know, taking the time to dig into the resources that we have beyond the walls of our district to look at what is out there to support.
I think that could be another barrier too, where I have teachers reach out to me constantly and they're like, I have to use this curriculum. If the principal walks in and I'm doing anything else, I'm going to get in trouble. And for me, and I think maybe it's a place of privilege where I could get fired and that would be okay for me. There's no way I'm going to be teaching kids something that I know is wrong. Like, if my math book, I always use this example, it's like, if your math book told you to teach kids that 2 + 2 = 5, are you going to do that? Or are you going to tell them, no, 2 + 2 = 4? So why would it be any different with reading? You know, an approach is wrong. You've been doing it for years and you always have poor, struggling readers. Why would you continue to do that when you've seen, you know, from Instagram or your own reading, there's better options to try? Why would you just not give that a try? Like, at some point we do have to just say, this is what's best for kids. It's harming kids. And maybe it's not physically harming them. You know, you're not like breaking their arm, but in the long run, when they are adults that cannot read, you're harming them for the rest of their life. Like, it does matter, kinder, first, second grade, that we are doing these things, even if it goes against, you know, the district curriculum.
I love that example that you gave. You know, yeah, you're not teaching them 2 + 2 = 5. And that's like very clear. I think at some point we have to accept that science of reading is very clear as well. Just like we think of math as, you know, yes, this is a fact. This is the way it is. Yeah. There cannot be another way. Like, this is the way we learn to read. This is what our brains are doing. And this is factual. And this is how we have to teach it. I think that's so important. When we had our pre-call, there were a couple of things that you talked about, and you talked about trusting the process and trusting the research. Do you want to just speak a little bit more about that? Because that's what just made me think about, as you're talking about that math piece, like, you wouldn't teach this. So how do we start to make that shift as we think about really trusting the process and trusting the research?
Yes, I think that can be so tricky for people, because I feel like teachers DM me just constantly every day, and they're like, I'm trying this and I don't know if this is working. And I had a teacher specifically last week that was like, you know, usually by this time this year, my students would know 50 sight words, and they don't know 50 sight words. I'm like, but you have them like memorizing like these little cards and they don't really know them. They can't read them. They don't know that two E's makes the long E sound. They don't know, you know, glued sounds or anything like that. Like, think about, like, it might be a little bit slower. So, like, that's what I mean when I say it. Like, yes, you have to work your way through systematically, but when you do it right, they're going to just start unlocking all sorts of words and sounds, and they're not going to lose it in third grade when the pictures go away and the guessing, you know, isn't as accurate anymore because the text is harder. So, and it's like you said, like, knowing that this science is the science, it's right. And when you do it right and you build on it, it might feel slower. And what you, like, you may be like, oh, last year my students could all read level H books, you know,
right.
And now they're not at level H. But they're going to be able to read anything once you teach them the code, and it doesn't, like, level H doesn't matter anymore. And so, like, that's really what I mean when I say that, like, when they're using certain measures that they used to use, but it's like, but that wasn't working. So why are we still relying on those old measures? Follow the code systematically, be explicit. And it's like, just trust that, like, I'm doing it the right way and it's going to come. Like, that was me last year stressing out because I have to get these kids ready for third grade and we're working on the alphabet. And I was like, yes, I could have just started flashing them a bunch of sight words and they could have started to memorize a few of those things. But I was like, nope, we have to start at A through Z. We work through short vowels, long vowels. Like, we're going through all this stuff that I usually do with kindergartners and first graders. And it was like, oh my goodness, like December, but like the second half of the year, they really started to take off. And it was just the coolest thing ever. But it was like, so it's like, I know it's going to work eventually. It's just when it clicks for them and how far behind they are, but I know that it's going to work. And it's like, you're changing their brains. Like, you're doing phonological awareness. It literally changes a part of their brain. Like, that's going to take time and that's okay. So memorization might be a quick fix right now, but when you're following the science, it's going to be something that helps them in the long run.
Yeah. And I think, again, just going back to why what you're doing is so important is that trusting that process. I think that's where, as we think about some of those challenges, that's a huge challenge for teachers that maybe don't know what that process is, right? As you said, if I've always just looked at the letter, oh, this student's a letter A or a letter J, this is their level. I don't know what it looks beyond, you know, my kindergarten, first, second grade classroom where, yeah, maybe it does look like we're off to a slower start. I'm not sure. There's that brain research study from Stanford in 2015 that looked at readers and looked at their brain of what's happening. Those students that were memorizing those words as whole visual units, well, they looked like they were off to a faster start in kindergarten and first grade, right? And then those students that were doing the hard work of saying the sounds and blending those sounds together and that reading was so slow and so labored, they looked like they were off to a slower start. Mm-hmm. But as we look at that process, what happened, right? They surpassed those whole word readers. And as you said, unlocking, right, this code, because we don't read words as whole visual units. Like, you know, we
right, we just don't. And I think some people are like people will argue me. They're like, well, some kids do. And I'm like,
no,
they don't. I was like, it's not my opinion. Like, if you don't believe me, you look it up yourself. But like, that's just not what happens. It just isn't.
And so. And it's like, I love that you said that. That's often, well, kids learn to read in different ways. And it's like, but the process for reading is the same. Some kids just pick it up without that explicit instruction, right? But like, they still need this. What we're doing is still the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's just some kids need you to explicitly show them how this works. And some students are like, oh, I've got this. But there's not a proficient reader out there that doesn't have phonemic awareness, ability to isolate, blend, segment, manipulate sounds, or they don't know that print. Right. Sometimes we don't know why we know it, right?
Right, exactly. It's like, what's the first thing we do when we get to a really long, like you're reading ingredients and there's some really long words. You're looking for base words and prefixes and suffixes and like this part of the word. We do the same thing. We just have so many words that are already permanently stored, but we do that too.
Exactly.
As adults that are proficient readers. So,
okay, so when we revisit equity in education and we think about our nation's scores, you know, we know 95% of students can become readers. We know the story is, you know, it's about 32%, and always somewhere in the 30s in our nation historically. But we also know that percentage looks different depending on the community that you're in as well, right? So that's the nation scores, but you always want to dig into your community. It might be higher, it might be lower. And so when we think about this number of 95%, of students can become readers. We know as a nation, we are failing students, right? This is a national problem. Is there anything that you think as a nation that we need to be doing like right now to address this issue nationwide?
Yes, I wish there was mandated time that says you have to deliver phonological awareness for this many minutes a day in this grade level, or like throughout all the grade levels, what the mandated time is. And I wish that there was a nationwide, kind of like how Common Core rolled out and is like, no matter where you are, you have to do this. Systematic phonics, like kindergarten is responsible for this, no matter what state you're in. First grade is responsible for this, so that you would know, okay, they probably got this in this grade level and you could know how to build. And then people would have just the set plan of where to start and where to go. Because I think that's something that throws people off too, and it overwhelms them, which is why they then cling to the curriculum. There's no set place of where to go, or some kids know this, some kids know that, what do I do? So if there was just this set standard of that and mandated time that this has to be taught for this many minutes, because here's what the research says, I think we could, you know, solve a lot of issues.
Absolutely love that answer for so many reasons, right? Because it goes back to what we were talking about before. We don't learn to read in different ways. So, you know, if you're in a rural versus a city, it doesn't matter. Our brains are learning to read the same way. And if I have students that maybe move a lot, I know what they, you know, I know what they've been taught. Or right, as you said, you know, you start in one school and then you flip to another and it's a completely different way of providing that instruction. So I think that is such a phenomenal answer. As we think about kind of wrapping up, I would love if you would share some practical tips or takeaways for teachers who are listening, who are maybe like, oh yeah, I do, you know, I level my students, or, you know, I never thought about this whole word reading thing. And oh, absolutely, we should be listening for sounds. What are some just small steps, if you are in a district that maybe has not embraced the science yet, that you can make within your own classroom to allow our students to have the skills that they need?
Yeah. So I think specifically when it comes to just decoding, just being able to read the words on the page, is you've got to make sure you're doing phonological awareness. I always share the story that my first year teaching, we had this really great reading program. And the green section was like phonemic awareness activities that the veteran teachers on the team, there were 8 of us, 4 of us were brand new and 4 of them had been there forever. And they were like, skip that section. That is like a waste of time. You don't have to do the green section. But we were so afraid because the principal would come through every day and be like, you better be on the same page. So we were so afraid of getting in trouble that we did the green section. And it did feel silly, like isolating sounds and say bat, but take off the B. And it's like, this is so dumb. Like, we need to be in a book. We need to be flashing sight, you know. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the year, our students could read so much better than the other 4 teachers. And I was like, it was that green section. Like, that is the missing piece. It's the only thing that we did that they didn't do. So I feel like from year one, I really got to see the power of that. And like, I've always advocated for that. Cause I was like, and sadly it was this like study that, you know, these kids didn't get it. I even had twins and I had one in my class and one in another class. And the mom was like, why is he reading, but he's not. And they're at the same school and they're twins. And I was like, it's the green section. So phonemic awareness, it may feel silly. It may feel pointless. They're struggling along with it. They can't, you know, isolate the sound. Keep doing it anyway. Like, a lot of the times I'm there modeling it. They can't hear the rhymes. They can't remove the sound. It's really tricky. Like, trust that, or know that it's really hard for them to do. So it's not something that you're like, this isn't working, let me go to something else. Trust the process on that. Keep doing it. Allow them to hear it. You have to model a lot. You may have to give them the answers a lot, but eventually they will get there. I feel like it always happens in waves. The ones that are going to get it early, they get it, you know, in the first 2 months. And then maybe the next wave of kids, it starts to click with them, you know, a few months later. And then that last wave of kids, maybe the end of the year, but finally they can rhyme, they can segment, they can blend. And you're like, yes, it worked. So in that way, kids can learn differently as far as the timelines of when something clicks, but it will click. You can't just skip it just because it didn't happen the first few weeks you tried it. And then, so don't skip your phonological awareness, like get your Hegarty books out and stick to it and make it fun. And then systematic phonics and phonemic awareness, you can't go wrong. You truly can't. Like, take the time, find out the sounds they know, make a plan and plan out the sounds that they need to know, and then work systematically from simplest to more complex and keep introducing sounds and give them the opportunity to say those sounds, read with those sounds, write with those sounds, and you will get a reader. Like, I promise you that.
Yes. And I mean, that's the best piece of advice. And as you think about teachers, again, that maybe don't have access, if you don't have a curriculum that teaches all of that, You can, you know, there is, you need to follow a scope and sequence. And as you said, starting, you know, from the simplest to more complex, you can find a scope and sequence anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So find a scope and sequence.
On my blog. That, right? I have a scope and sequence on my website. Perfect. I have three like phonemic awareness activities on my website, but it's like, you have to be doing it, or just Google it and you can make up your own activities, exactly. But you have to be doing it for sure.
Right. Well, I cannot thank you enough for joining us today. I could talk to you forever. But if you are listening, I do really encourage you to check out Naomi's website and the book she already has published, and hopefully some future plans for a book as well. But thank you for all that you do to support education and teachers. And we look forward to continuing to watch you share what you're doing and what you're learning. Thank you so much for your time today, Naomi.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was fun. Bye.
Be sure to subscribe and stay tuned for our upcoming episodes where we explore literacy topics in a snack-sized, easily digestible format.